Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I love stories, and I love travel. So when such a personality as Susan Owens offers to come on podcast and tell us her travel stories, I'm in. Susan and I chatted about numerology in the summer, and she was so smart, so entertaining, we got along like wine and crusty bread with cheese. And as soon as I realized she loved to travel, I wanted to have her back on. She does not disappoint. Interesting, entertaining, she certainly reinforced my wanderlust. I hope you enjoy our chat, Susan's stories, and are inspired to get somewhere unfamiliar sometime soon. Listen now. Today's guest was here during the summer discussing numerology, a study that's been part of her life for over 30 years. Doing my research for that conversation, I realized Susan also has another passion, travel. Here's an intro from her website. Susan has a master's degree from Gonzaga University and taught English as a second language there. She has worked and lived in numerous places around the world, even calling Cairo home for a time while she wrote for the Egyptian Gazette. She traveled independently through Africa, Asia, Europe, New Zealand, and both North and South America. She lived in Peru along the Amazon, studying with a local shaman. She walked the Camino pilgrimage in Spain and taught young monks at a monastery in Nepal. She has traveled the planet by air, land, and more than once by freighter. She is currently working on her new book, The Traveling Psychic, where she shares many of her adventures. See, I got her in my peripheral vision here. I can't do this straight. Where she shares many of her adventures, including, I left my underpants on the Nile. I had to copy that from her website so you'd know I didn't make it up. If you're interested in numerology, the link to that conversation is in the show notes. Today, I am so interested to know more about Susan's travels. Susan Owens, welcome back to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Oh, thanks, Agnes. It's so fun to talk to you. Anytime, you just call me and I'm here. It's like old friends meeting. I think we were old friends the first time we met.
So yeah.
Anytime.
I'm all over that.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Okay, Susan, let's start by following up on the teaser you left us with at the end of our last conversation. You said your legal name was Susan, S-U-S-A-N, but you changed the second S to a Z, Z, because it was an 8 number. I'm going to encourage our listeners to go listen to that episode to find out about that, but you explained it was timely because you were living in Cairo at the time, and Suzanne is a popular Egyptian name, as well as the fact that the wife of then-President Mubarak was named Suzanne. You also shared that the one part of the world that plucks at your heartstrings is Africa. So we're going to start there. Tell us more about Africa.
Oh, gosh. You know, people ask me, where's your favorite place to travel? And all of them, everywhere I've been. And over, I was thinking about this today, because over and over, I'll be somewhere and I'll think, oh my gosh, this is the most beautiful place on the planet. And I live in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and it's a beautiful place here. Everywhere, I think, honestly, truthfully, I found beauty everywhere. And the thing about Africa, though, it stopped me more than once. And by stopping me, I mean, I just have to take this in. And I'm moved to tears. I'm standing there looking at this vista where the zebra and the wildebeest are crossing in their migration. Extraordinary. Or I come across 67 elephants. I counted. No kidding. From my Toyota. By this time, I should backtrack. But I did a lot of safaris, many safaris. Everywhere I went, I would do safaris. And then by the time I got to Namibia, I rented a car and I just drove and I would see animals. So it was like I was in a safari whenever I was in my car. So from my Toyota, I saw 67 elephants come up on this watering hole. And babies, you know, the matriarch, it was amazing to watch them. And then another time, all these antelope stopped me. This, oh my gosh, Agnes, this was so cool. I was on a gravel road, and again, this was in Namibia, and I could see a long stream of these antelope crossing the road in front of me, or we weren't going to collide, but we were coming close to each other. And I just stopped, turned the car off, and I just watched them cross. And then it seemed like they came out of nowhere because the line got longer and longer. And I finally thought, oh, okay. So I started the car and I just inched my way forward. And it was magical because they were nose to behind, right? I mean, there wasn't much space between them. But pretty soon, the closer I got, there would be a space. It was like, it was so organic, just natural, that they made a space for me to just pass through and go through. It was extraordinary. And so Africa, because it, I think, is my favorite continent. And then I think, oh gosh, Europe has so much. You can't compare them because they're all so, so different. But okay, so I was in Cairo and living there, and everyone said, get out of Cairo in the summer because it's hot, which it was getting there already. And I mean, we're talking triple digits all summer long. So I ended up making a trip to Kenya, booking the tour all the way through. Whatever I could do, I booked. I hired a guide, which was so fun because he taught me Swahili, which, by the way, is easier than German. I mean, it was such an easy language to learn. I'd forgotten most of it, but, you know, jumbo, you know. Anyway, so one of the first places we stopped was outside Nairobi, and there was we visited the Maasai Mara, and I stayed with the Maasai people. I wanted to stay all night in one of their huts, but he wouldn't let me. And so I've stayed 2 or 3 days with them and spent time with the women. And all the photographs, by the way, are on my website, SusanOwens.com. And then everything, I got to tell you about these people because they're extraordinary. They have incredibly white teeth, right? And their whole diet is based on beef, cattle. They drink the blood of the beef and the milk and everything, and the porridge, and they'll make porridge. The women they do everything. It's unreal. And of course I wanted to tell them you don't have to do, but you know, that would have been a waste of time. Anyway, I have a picture in my mind still of this darling, probably 12-year-old girl standing behind a cow as it defecates, and she's collecting all of it in her hands because everything that they build is from that manure, straw, sticks, their huts, everything, all of it. It's like everything comes from their cattle and sheep and goats, I think they have. So when I was there, I got to meet the three elders of the tribe too, and they weren't doing much. They were in their 90s, they said. And so they slept a lot, but I did meet them, and there's a photograph of me shaking their hand and talking to them. And I had a guide. One of the elders told this young man to go to college. He said, get out of here, get out of the tribe, and you go to school. And he did, graduated, and his English was perfect. And he was my guide for the time I was with the Maasai. So he would translate back and forth. And of course, and they see me as an American. You have money. They whether you do or not, you have money. And so they're always trying to sell me things. And of course, I'm happy to support them too. I mean, you know, so it was a reciprocal kind of event. But the other thing, I got to tell you this one last bit about it, because I met their medicine man. Now the medicine man, they make this, drink. I don't think they called it anything, but it was a drink that they made out of, you know, the loofah sponge that we have. Well, if you harvest it early, evidently you can ferment that, and that's this drink. And I had one sip of it and I thought, I'm not, there's no way. Well, the medicine man had 3 cups of it. We were sitting there and he read my stones. This was so cool. So the stones that he read, quote unquote stones, he carried them in a gourd, an old emptied out gourd, and he spit in it and he shook, and he threw the stones out onto this cloth, and the stones included rock stones, there might have been a crystal in there, an old nut, bolt and nut kind of thing, piece of glass, just a funny array of things. And he read them, and I'm doing air quotes. I don't know why, because nobody can see that except you. But anyway, so that he read my stones. And the first thing he asked me is, where's your husband? Because everything is about a husband. Women have no value. Really, they're not valued at all in that culture. And other than to have babies, if you can produce children and raise them and have a home, then you have value. But if you cannot, it's a challenging life. And again, the men have everything. So the children all stay with their mothers. They sleep with their mothers, and their fathers, well, let's say they normally have more than one wife. And so if the children are coming home to crawl into bed and their father's walking staff stick is outside the door of the hut, then they go find some other place to sleep because they know their father is that night with their mother, and that was it. Yeah. Anyway, fascinating culture and lovely, beautiful, healthy babies, beautiful people. I didn't anticipate that. I had no idea what to expect, but I remember still moved to this day about it because I'm fascinated with anybody that's different than I am. You know what I mean? Like that whole, tell me about your life, because my life, I know what my life's like. Tell me about yours. What's your life experience? You know, I just want to know about people. And it was really fascinating to meet this tribe that lives how they do, and very different than driving a car across America. You know, I mean, it's just totally different. Anyway, so that was.
So did he read your stones?
He read my stones, and he told me, he said that I was coming back to Kenya someday, and I agreed with him. I thought absolutely I was going to come back to Kenya. I haven't yet made it. Isn't that funny? But I know that I will. I mean, I know that it's still out there, that's a possibility. And he told me, he could read me. He said, you need to keep going, keep traveling. You need to keep going until you are tired. And I thought, well, that hasn't happened yet. So, I mean, I thought, there's good advice. So, yeah, I'd love to see them again, too. I mean, this has been, let's see, that would have been 2006 that I was there. So almost 20 years ago that I was there. And I know that you and I are near the same age, but at this age, 20 years is nothing. It's like, oh, I can remember this like it was yesterday. So yeah, that was a good one. But
So was it strange, like driving by yourself in a car through? Okay.
No, and you would think that I felt safe everywhere. There was one place I pulled up to a gas station, and a young man came up to me and said, I'm going here. Can you take me? And I said, no, I'm not going that way. And it was very common for people to come up and ask for a ride. I really everywhere except for Johannesburg, and that's another story for another day. But I've always felt really safe no matter where I'm at. And then I did drive across South Africa too, but it was stormy, and I'd like to do that again because I didn't really get to do South Africa like I wanted. I left Cape Town. I turned 50, by the way, in Cape Town, and that felt like it was a San Francisco. Oddly, I would walk around the city and I'd go, it feels like San Francisco. Have you ever done that? Been to a city and somewhere totally different and you go, this just has this energy of a completely different place, you know? Yeah, that was great.
So. The reason I asked about being alone is because I have talked to other people who traveled probably well prior to your travels. And there were lots of like either wars or warfare going on in different areas. And, you know, they were well aware, like when they'd get to a border or, you know, they'd be in a town and there's these armed people walking around, stuff like that. And it's a little intimidating. And I would think for a woman traveling alone, because you hear the stories.
I didn't ever experience that. What did I start with? I went to Kenya and then I went south. I went to Tanzania as well, Zambia. I did a bungee jump across the Zambezi River between Zimbabwe and Zambia, and that was so funny because it's the border between the two countries, and there's a checkpoint there, and I said, I'm not crossing into Zimbabwe. I'm just going to do the bungee jump. And the guy looked at me and he said, "You?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm going to do it." And he said, "I don't believe you." And I said, "Well, you just wait. I'll show you my sticker," because they would give you a stamp if you'd actually done the thing, which I did. It was fun. I loved it. I'd do it again. And then let's see, Zambia. And then, like I said, I went through South Africa and then up through Namibia. I got to tell you this story about Botswana. And this is the kind of people I meet. I'm so blessed with life experience, because I was in a van going back into Botswana, and there was this darling girl, and I said, "You know, I'm going into Botswana, but I really don't know what I want to do. Where do I want to go?" And she said, "Here's my mother's phone number. She's in the travel industry. You call her when you get there." And I said, "Okay, great." End of conversation. That was it. Took all of, you know, what, 20, 30 seconds. So I get into Moun, Maun, and Moun is a sandy little community. And we have, well, we don't, but some communities have roving dogs, you know. They had roving donkeys. They had little donkeys running around and they're in their garbage. It was just the funniest thing. Really sweet people. And everyone said hi to everyone else. They always greeted you, whoever, you know. And they greeted me. They don't know who I am, but and of course I would greet them. It was lovely. So Linda was the woman's name that I was supposed to contact, and I did call her, and she said, "Oh, Susan, I'm so glad you called me. My daughter told me how kind you were to her. So this is just so exciting. Meet me for coffee." I thought, okay, yay, yeah, all right. I've got to cut this short because it is a great story. Anyway. Linda worked for an airline, a bush pilot airline, and she said, "Why don't you take my bed nights?" And I said, "Oh, okay, here, just go spend the night out in the, you know, you'll get to go stay here and show up at the airport tomorrow. I'll meet you there and tell you what to do." Well, I've been in Africa long enough to know that, bless them, people say things and they just don't follow through. So I'm sitting at the airport. Nothing on paper. I have no ticket, no nothing. And I'm sitting at the airport, and this guy comes up, or I went up to their desk and I said, "Hi, I'm Susan. I'm supposed to meet Linda." She said something about, "Oh, yeah, you're her bed nights. Oh, okay. Just wait, the plane's going to take off." Okay, so I get on the plane, and there's six people on it, the pilot, me, and a family of four. Takes off and we land in a field, and I'm going, okay, I'm in the middle of nowhere. And then a car com or a jeep comes and picks them up and takes them off, and the plane leaves, and I'm standing there by myself, right? I have no idea, Agnes, absolutely no idea what I'm doing. It talk about surrender. What else am I going to do, right? So in a couple minutes, here comes another plane. It lands and then it says, "Oh, you're Susan's bed knight." "Yeah, I am." Or, "Susan, you're Linda's bed knight." "Yeah, I'm Susan." Well, okay, so and he takes me, we go deeper into what is called the Okavango Delta and Duba Plains, and we land, which I don't know if that was the middle of nowhere. I don't know where. I'm even more in the middle of nowhere. And I get out, and here's this magnificent Jeep waiting for me. It's tiered level. It's obviously their safari Jeep. And he takes me to this camp that has it's temporary. You can tell you could tear it down, but it has beautiful wooden stairs and wooden platforms. And my tent is a king size bed, canvas roof, but a veranda, my own toilet inside, shower inside my tent and outside. So I did shower outside with the warthogs as they're running by. It was so fun. And I went to sleep listening to the to Africa. I mean, the lions are roaring. You can hear the elephants stomping around. It's just amazing. And I had no idea. I had no idea what I was getting into. And then we did safaris. We did two a day. And I saw a lion kill, which was amazing. And then, again, another story for another day. But there had been people on that particular trip that had come for 10 years that had never seen a lion kill. So it was, and it, National Geographic had tents there. They did a study of the relationship between the Cape buffalo and the lion, because it's nature, you know, So that was amazing. And then when I got back, I gave Linda all the rest of the pula I had, all the rest of my Botswana dollars. And she said, "Susan, I can buy a goat. I'm so excited." And I was like, "You're so welcome." I mean, it wasn't, you know, anyway, that was Botswana. So yeah, there's just, I guess the Africa means lots of adventure. Maybe that's why I'm passionate about it, you know.
And so tell me honestly, did you invent glamping then?
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. You're right. Absolutely. Cause it was amazing. And then they told me later that if I purchased this, it probably would have been about $800 a night. And this again was 20 years ago. So, you know, and I think there's more places like that. I just, at that time, I had never heard of anything like it. I had no idea. I just thought I was going to get dumped in the middle of nowhere, and there you go. But that's the thing about Africa too. It felt like I was in the middle of nowhere a lot of times. It was just beautiful. So, yeah. Anyway, so do you want to hear about my underpants story? Because that is a funny one. I can tell you about that one.
Well, I was going to ask you that later on. Well, sure. Okay. Tell it to me now. No, that's okay. No,
I should.
No, you're a psychic. You know what are in my notes. We talked about that last time.
All right. Well, this one, I got to tell this one because it is a great one. Well, So I was in Luxor, Egypt, and I had just finished a cruise on the Nile. Now, it's compulsory. When you go to Egypt, you go in Cairo, you do a Nile cruise. You just have to, because they go up the Nile, and you get to visit all the temples along the river. It's extraordinary and beautiful. Anyway, so I was I had finished the cruise. I was in Luxor, and I was unpacking my suitcase at the Sheraton. Now, again, this was 20 years ago. And I discovered that I didn't have any of my underwear. And I had washed them the night before in my stateroom, and they were still hanging in the bathroom on the cruise ship, which was now docked an hour away from where I happened to be at the time. Now, this, you just don't get in the car and drive down. It just doesn't, it's not like here. You, a woman traveling alone, you have to have a guard, you have to have a driver. You're subject to everybody else's rules. Anyway, so I didn't know how to replace them, because the only shopping that I had ever done in Egypt was tourist bazaars. So I could buy a hookah or sterling jewelry, but there I had not yet seen any underwear for sale. So I had to call the ship. And now I know you remember this, flip phones. This was the time of flip phones. And very few cell towers. So I was in the Sheraton, and it was charming. It was antiquated at the time. And the only way I could call the ship was I had to use the public telephones that were in a enclosed bank of small cubicles along this wall in this hallway.
We've all seen the movies, yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. And you could barely fit in, right? So they were really tiny wooden capsules, paper thin. Privacy was not in the priority of their construction. So anyway, so I tell the operator, call the ship, and I say hello, and I hear hello, and I said, "This is Susan Owens. I was in room 217 on your cruise. Hold the line. I'll transfer you." And I said, no, wait. I was in 217. I need I need to talk to you. And he said, who is this? And I said, well, I'm Susan Owens. And it was fuzzy and his voice was far away. Again, flip phone. I could barely hear him. And finally he said, oh, Miss Suzanne, what can I do for you? And I said, well, I have a problem. Well, I can't hear you. You know, he's yelling at me. And I said, well, I have a problem. I left something in my room and I'm trying to be discreet because I hear rustling next door, right? So in the cubicle next to me, he said, well, what do you need? I said, I left my panties in the bathroom. You know, I'm trying to whisper, right? You left what? And I said, well, I left my underwear in the bathroom of 217 and I'd like to get them back. And of course, he's yelling, he's getting louder. What did you leave? You know, I look at the receiver. I remember this distinctly. I look at the receiver and I shout, my panties. I want my panties. And he says, oh, and it was total silence. And I'll have someone check in the room and collect the items for you. Well, and I said, thank you. And the thing of it was, men and women don't talk about those kinds of things. I mean, it was really uncomfortable for him to be discussing my private things. It was in that kind of a culture. Anyway, so I took a deep breath and I was more than humiliated to yell this thing out with this guy. But as soon as I step out of the cubicle, right next door to me opens and a man standing there, he gives me one look in this lovely British accent and he says, have you got a problem with your knickers, dearie? God, I was so embarrassed. But I did in fact get my knickers back, but it took, I don't know how many people had their hands on, never mind. It was just, I did get them back. So it was a success story, but oh my goodness, you know.
And you washed them again at the Sharon.
Oh my goodness.
And I bet you've never done that since.
No. I do wash them, but I remember that I've washed them. And yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And exactly where you've hung them up.
Right.
I'm sure the people around were going like, where was she last night that she's demanding her panties back? Can we get in on some of this white woman?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't stand around and talk to this British guy. I just bolted out of there. And I thought, unfortunately, I never did run into him again. I thought that was enough. Anyway, funny stories. But yeah, that was great.
Okay, take us to Asia.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So much there, too. Well, I did. Okay, can we talk freighter first? Or were you going to ask about freighter travel?
Of course, I was going to ask.
Okay, all right. Well, all right. Well,
Okay, let me just find my question because the way I phrase it is because of my age, I have to ask because it was quite common when I was young, travel by freighter. Okay, so talk to us about travel by freighter.
Oh, I didn't know that it was common. Well, okay. Well, this was interesting because when I was, and we'll get to Asia. I don't mean to blow you off there because I definitely will get to it because. But when I was in Africa, for some reason it came to me about traveling on a freighter that I knew it was possible. And I was kind of hoping that I would catch a freighter out of Africa and go somewhere. Well, it didn't happen. What happened was I was in New Zealand at the time. And I thought, when you go to New Zealand, you got to know this. When you go to New Zealand, they make you have a round trip ticket. And I didn't want to buy one because I knew I wouldn't need it. Something said, you don't need this, but they made me do it. And so I had a round trip ticket. If you do that though, buy an outgoing ticket to Tasmania or something. I mean, it's just really, you know, you don't have to go very far. Anyway, so I'm driving through New Zealand, which I love. And I'm thinking again about freighter. Sure enough, I get to this little town called Napier and in the newspaper, Hamish Jameson, freighter expert, talk to him, you know, and that's where I'm going to be the next day. So sure enough, there it is. So I talk to this guy and I say, I want to travel on a freighter. And I said, I really don't know where I want to go, but I just want to go on a freighter. And he said, well, you want to go to China? Like, you idiot. Of course you want to go to China if you're going to be on. Okay, whatever. Anyway, so he said, you're not going to get a freighter out of here. In New Zealand. And I thought, yeah, I don't think you're right, but okay. Sure enough, the next week he calls me and he said, I've got your freighter. It's a German ship out of Dunedin, which is like very southern island. most part of it, and you'll get off in Port Kelong, which is Kuala Lumpur. And then a French ship will pick you up from Kuala Lumpur and will take you to China. Well, it was, the German ship was a mixture of people. I think the captain was Russian and the crew were from Myanmar. Lovely people. I hung out with the crew the whole time. They were just darling. And of course, they thought I was fantasy, you know, really interesting. And at that time, there was another couple that was traveling on the freighter. But, and we'd have dinner together and all that. But the trip I want to tell you about, the freighter that I want to tell you about, is the one that picked me up in Port Kelong, because I traveled that one a lot. And it was a friendship. That sounds funny. It was CMA CGM, which is the third largest shipping company. It was at that time. I think it still is. And traveling on a French ship, we had breakfast, which was a croissant, of course, and coffee. But lunch and dinner always were white table linens, more silverware than you could imagine, and always served to us by the steward. And it's French food, right? So, and I would dine with the officers. We would meet in the lounge and we'd have an aperitif and then we would go in and have dinner. And I could go anywhere on the ship, anywhere. Carte blanche. I mean, they let me go anywhere. And like I said, the sailors, so the story is me and 25 sailors went to China. You know, that's the story I tell. And they're so darling to me. They would always.
Do you still have your panties?
Oh yeah, I still can't get my panties. But I did have an affair with the captain, and we ended up being engaged. We didn't end up getting married, but we were engaged for a couple of years, so that was kind of fun. But anyway, so that's why I got to travel on the freighter a lot more. So it pays to sleep with the captain, I guess. Anyway, that's another story for another time. So. But the crew would always shake my hand, and they were so sweet. And if they'd been in the engine room and their hands were greasy, they would kind of turn their hand in, and they would touch the top of my hand with theirs. It was just they were so kind. They just wanted to greet me, and I think I was kind of an anomaly. But anyway, so every time I would get off the ship, because we'd pull into port. And we were there a day. You were never in a port for a week. That doesn't happen anymore. So it was a day. And every time I'd get off the ship, they'd say, "We will not wait for you." It was very clear. Do not be late. And honestly, I wish I could remember. I was in some port, and it was a good-sized one. Most of them are, of course, in China. And this taxi driver picked me up. And took me back to the port, and I couldn't remember which berth my ship was in. And of course, he didn't speak English. And by the grace of, yes, thank you, he got me to the ship on time. But we drove around that port. Oh, and I was so frustrated, and he was frustrated. It was, Anyway, but it was a wonderful way to see the world. I loved being on the ship, and all I could see was horizon, water, sun and water. It was beautiful. Sun and
is
sea.
It still a thing? Like, can you still do that?
Yeah. In fact, I would think that you could do it a lot, because it takes fewer people to run the ship anymore, right? It's all pretty much automated. So there's empty berths. Mine happened to be, again, right next to the captain. So that was convenient. But I could go into the engine room. I mean, I was comfortable there. My dad was a welder. So all that equipment, all the machinery and all that stuff was, you know, felt like I was home. I didn't go down there very much. My favorite place is the forecastle. Do you remember the movie Titanic where, the couple is standing there?
Right, right.
That's the forecastle. And it truly is a magical place on the ship. Yeah, the energy there, I don't know why, if it's first or whatever, but it's fabulous.
What sort of a price do you pay compared to, I don't know, a flight or something?
Gosh, I don't even remember, because this was...
But was it pretty cheap at the time?
It didn't feel like a lot of money because I think I paid a few hundred dollars, and I got all my food, lodging, whatever, and I was probably 10 days. So yeah, it wasn't $100 a day even. And so, okay, you got to hear this. Okay. This is when I was engaged to the captain because they had a,
I was going to include that.
Yeah. All right. So there was a, I was in Malta a number of times because they had a port in Malta that they was kind of their, how do I say this? They would usually stop in Malta, no matter where they had been, they would stop in Malta. So I would meet the ship in Malta and then we'd go back to the, we'd go back to Europe because he lived in Nice. And so I got to spend a lot of time in the French Riviera, which was magnificent. But anyway, so I'm in Malta and I get a call from him and he said, well, you're not going to believe this, but we're not stopping. And I went, oh my gosh, what are we, you know, what am I going to have to do? And he said, just wait. He said, I'll send a tugboat for you. And yeah, it was Barbara Streisand. No one's raining on my parade. I took a tugboat out to this magnificent freighter and the water was not calm. So I had to walk front and the ship had, it wasn't a plank. It had a ladder that went on the outside of the ship. 72 steps. I counted them. So you'd have to, I had to go up 72 steps on this ladder on the outside of the ship as it's rocking in the Mediterranean. And not to mention climbing from the tugboat onto the ladder on, yeah. Anyway, clearly I made it, but it again, what a fun adventure, right?
Jeez, it must have been love.
Anyway, yeah.
Okay,
China.
You want to the other story I want you to tell is just because of that dreadful incident in Baltimore in the spring, you had some excitement in Tangiers, in a port in Tangiers.
Yeah, that was crazy because, and you know what? I honestly, I don't have pictures. And I thought, how did I not have pictures? Well, I didn't have my camera with me, which was unusual. But we ended up, I was going to make cookies. I was so tired about being on the ship. I wanted to get off. And I was so excited about getting off in Tangiers because I'd never been to Morocco. Even just a, would have been, that would have been great. And they wouldn't let me off because they were concerned about people trying to leave Tangiers. So they just said nobody on or off. So I was stuck on the ship. So I said, all right, I'm going to make cookies. And that's enough. That was going to be my adventure that day. I was going to try to bake cookies in a Celsius oven that's not my own, you know, a big industrial oven without the recipe, without my, you know, all of it. Anyway, so I'm, the cook is telling me how to maneuver some things. And over the loudspeaker, it's the captain. And he's always so calm. I can't believe this man. And he, basically it was battle stations, everybody. And you can just, they weren't calm. People were running and I'm going, okay, what's going on? So I head up to the bridge, which again, a number one favorite place on the ship because you can see everything. And what had happened was that the back of the ship was tied to a bollard. Now, this was one of those enormous metal bubbles, I guess, if you would, that's anchored on the dock, and it had come loose. They'd actually, well, I went and looked at it later because I was able to get off and go see what the deal was. And it was built poorly. The storm had come up and it had pulled the bollard loose from the dock. And so if you can imagine this, whatever 300-pound bollard flying through the air and it hits the front of the ship, dents it, but I mean, it would have immediately killed somebody if that had happened. And so a ship was supposed to be parallel to the dock was now perpendicular. The hind end of the ship had swung around and the front end was still tied to the dock. So it was a real precarious way out of this particular port. It was kind of like, make me think of a maze. You had to go straight, left, right, and out. Unreal. And usually in a port, you have tugboats guiding you. So, and a pilot on board to tell you how to get in and out. Well, we didn't have any of that at this point. And so the captain, in his extraordinary expertise, fired up the engines. We untethered the front of the ship, and he fired up the engines, spun the ship around, and got us out of there. But right next to us was another ship. We could have smashed into the ship, smashed into the dock, or the jetty that was right there. But totally fine. It was amazing. It really was an act of brilliance to get us out of there. So then what happens? I thought, oh good, we're going to go home. And no, we're not going home. We managed to pick up four castaways because there were four guys working on the ship and they needed to get back to Morocco. These guys weren't sailors. They were terrified of being on the water. That's funny. And not only that, oh, the captain, this was great. When you see white caps on the water, in the French, they call it mouton or sheep. And I looked out there and I went, yeah, there's herds of sheep out there now. And the ship just rocked. And if you've ever been on a big ship where there's lots of waves, you're walking down the hallway and all of a sudden you're walking downhill. And then all of a sudden, because no warning, you're walking uphill, right? It's just crazy. But we got out of that one and survived. And truly, it was the captain that saved us. It was amazing what he put together and how he managed everybody. Because they were all talking on the radio. Everybody was, yeah, it was quite an adventure.
Okay, the other two places I did want to ask about were Asia and... what was the other one? Oh, the Camino.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, okay. So I decided that I was going to do the Camino. Oh, I don't know how many decades ago. As soon as I first heard about it, because I thought, yeah, I'm going to do that. It was a knowing that came to me. Yeah, I'm going to do the Camino. And then I kind of forgot about it. And then years later, I thought, I'm going to do it before I'm 60. Well, crap. I was coming up, and I thought, I got to get this done. So it was 2016 in the spring, and I got into shape. I was doing 5 miles a day. I found out it's 500 miles, basically, across Spain, and the Camino is in three sections. The first section is the physical section, because it is really a challenge. The first 4 days, I thought I was going to die. My body ached. The first night I got, because we crossed the Pyrenees, right? So the first night I took the miracle drug Advil and a glass of wine. And I woke up the next morning and I felt like, okay, I'm ready to go again. I don't know how. And that was the same for 3 days. I felt like I was absolutely going to die. And then we get to Pamplona, and I realized they were having a big street fair. I thought, oh my gosh, you're welcoming me here. But anyway, I got into bed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when I ended up there. Got up the next morning and my body was fine. And that was the last time I felt that. So the first third of it is physical. The middle is mental, because it's mostly plains. So there's not a lot to see. And I understand that's where a lot of people turn back or quit, because there's not a lot of challenge to it. It gets to be routine, kind of mundane. But the thing that was so cool about it, Agnes, is you just meet people. I did it alone, and I walked with people all the time, every time. And I met fabulous people from all over. I had an Australian family that kind of adopted me, which was really sweet. It was like, and really seriously. And you'd run into them all the time, and then you'd walk with them a while, and then they'd go one way, or you'd all go the same way, basically. But they'd walk faster, or you would. And so it was like, when you'd see them again, you'd say, oh, it felt like old friends. So that was the middle section. And then the final section is the spiritual section. And it started in Lyon. And I treated myself in Lyon. I was not a pilgrim in Lyon. I stayed at the Parador Hotel. That's what it's called. Very nice hotel. I gave housekeeping all of my clothes, including my panties. I gave them all my clothes, and I was going to get them back first thing in the morning and a pack up and leave, right? Worked out fine. I had great, great, great experience. But I was at the cathedral in Lyon, and I walked in, and I was just really overtaken with this incredible emotion, and I started to cry, and I had to sit down. I just couldn't move, and it occurred to me, and it hit me then, that I was a pilgrim in another life, and he didn't finish. I'm saying he because it probably was. It was another century, and it was a soul journey for me. It was a soul completion for me to do the pilgrimage. I absolutely, and that was that's where the knowing came from, and it was what compelled me to do it absolutely, and so I knew I had to finish, which there wasn't any doubt in my mind I would finish at that point, but it was a soul completion for me to do it. And then the spiritual treat was getting to Santiago, because the cathedral there, I made it in time for the big celebration that they do at noon. And they swing the big incense across the cathedral. I got a video of it. I'm extraordinary. And it was like, here's your reward, girl. I got to see it. I got to be there. Yeah, it was beautiful. But anybody that wants to do it, absolutely. I never had to care. Well, I did carry my backpack for a while, but you can ship it on to the next place, wherever you say you're going to be that night, you ship it. I booked hotels that same day. You can do a tour, that somebody can set that all up for you, but I didn't. I preferred to do it all by myself. And meet people and you share a hotel room and then I did stay in the abergues, what they called the public. I didn't stay in a public one. I stayed in the private abergues, which is the sleeping rooms, basically.
Like hostel kind of thing.
Hostels, yeah. Yeah. I did that a couple times, but hotel rooms, they were always available. And you could really feel you were doing a service to these people, because there were communities that you knew wouldn't exist if the pilgrims didn't come through. They wouldn't even be there. So it was lovely. Mm-hmm.
It's always fascinated me. And then, let me check here. I think it was 2 years ago, I did interview a woman who, I think she didn't do the entire Camino, but she did parts of the Camino. She started when she was like 80.
I know. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, just crazy. So I thought, well, there's hope for me yet.
I did meet a darling couple from New Zealand, and they do 5 miles of the Camino every year.
Oh, okay.
They'll go do a different part of it. It's the sweetest thing. And you could just see that there was such a connection for both of them to be on it. And, 5 miles, that's all they do a year, and that's plenty for them. It's so cute. Yeah,
I think it's still on my list of things. Right now I'm fighting a knee injury, but I will. Yeah, I don't need to do the whole thing.
No, absolutely not. And a lot of people just do the last 100 miles. Okay. And that the spiritual part. Check into that if that's all you want to do, because that's beautiful too, by the way. Hmm. Well, all of it is. It's even the plains. I mean, it's really a beautiful, beautiful place. Okay, I got to tell you the beginning part of that though, because so this is what we do. You get up and you have your coffee and your croissant, and then you walk 5 miles, and then you stop at a bar/cafe, and you check your blisters. So here's all these people in this cafe, and we got our boots off, and we're looking at our blisters. Seriously, where else would you see that? And then you keep walking. It's pretty unique. Plus, the fresh orange juice is to die for.
I thought you were going to say you drank enough wine, you didn't feel the blisters.
Oh, well,
anymore.
Yeah, the wine's pretty amazing, too, that's for sure. Yeah, oh, that kept Lord. Me numb a little bit. Yeah.
Okay, give me one more story, your choice. I put my notes away.
Oh, I was going to say, tell me where to go. New Zealand. I was in a place called Kaikoura, And here I am again talking about my clothes. But anyway, I'm in Kaikoura, and it's a little off season. There aren't very many people, and they offered this boat tour, and you could either feed the albatross, see the baby seals, or swim with the dolphins. And I said, well, I really want to do the albatross. I've kind of seen the other ones. I've been to Hawaii and whatever, and I could do that. And they said, well, you're the only one on the tour, so come back at 1 o'clock, and if there's somebody else signs up, then yay. So I did. I came back, and sure enough, there was one other person. So Captain Mike and his turned out to be a friend of his, and I, the three of us went out on this ship. Now, okay, so the other guy was a sailor. Oh, my God. God. Oh, he was gorgeous. Long blonde hair, blue eyes. And I went, oh, I'm glad I'm not any younger. I'd probably get into trouble there. But it was really fun. And they thought I was a hoot. So anyway, he said, okay, well, let's go out and feed the albatross. And on my website, I think it's one of the pictures I'm most proud of, because I got a shot of this albatross taken off. I was on the boat, which was rocking, and it's perfect center. And his albatross is taken off in flight. Anyway, we fed them. Pretty cool. And then Captain Mike goes, let's go see some dolphins. And I thought, oh, okay. Because, you know, really, it was a one out. Yeah, right. Yeah. So we go out in the water a little further, and he cuts the engine. And sure enough, here come these dolphins. And I said, can I go swim with them? And he said, yeah, sure. So, well, I was not prepared to do this. So here I am. Not very often do I take my clothes off in front of strange men and hand them my camera, but I did that, right? So, unfortunately, my underwear did not match, but it was in good repair. So I jumped in the water, and I swam with these dolphins, and it was so fun. I really had not done that before. So that was really cool. I get back into the boat, and magically a towel appears. Thank you so much. And then he said, let's go find some baby seals. So then we tootle along, and sure enough, we watch these seals on this big rock with the seagulls. And I just thought, you know, there's something to traveling alone. There's so many, it seems like, for me, I just feel like I get rewarded every time it's just me. And maybe not, I don't know, but it feels like I get blessed with such experiences that I wouldn't normally have in a group of people. And maybe that's not true, but I don't know, that's how I view it.
Well, and in your usual psychic way, that's probably a great segue, because I did want to ask if you had any tips for traveling solo. Like, especially women.
Yeah.
We women.
Right. Well, I think I feel safe everywhere I go. I think that the mindset that I am safe, that has a lot to do with it. I do protect myself in terms of I don't show up at midnight somewhere. You know, I want to get there in the middle of the afternoon. Let me get grounded in the area and settled in. I'm not opposed to taking a tour. I told you I've done lots of tours. And I think there's tours now for single women, which is kind of cool, right? Yeah, I mean, yeah. You get to meet other people. So, but really, totally be adaptable, be open. And be friendly. I talk to strangers all the time, and I learn things. And that's how I ended up holding a baby panda one day. I met somebody in Hong Kong, and I said, I'm not sure where I want to go. And he said, just check out the Bi Feng Shui Panda Preserve. And I volunteered there. So I got to hang with the pandas for a weekend. So I talk to strangers all the time, being adaptable, being open. And there will be judgments about you, especially a blonde woman from America. Yeah, I get that thrown at me, but it's not who I am. So, you know, but open and adaptable, I would say, is your best bet, really.
Anywhere you haven't been that you will get to someday, come hell or high water.
Right. Well, you know, Antarctica, right? I mean, that's the last one. I haven't been there, and I don't know if they'll close it or whatever. We'll see. I don't know. I don't like being cold either, so maybe I'm going to skip it altogether. I don't know. More South America, I think, is on the docket. I've only been to Peru and Chile. So I would like to see more South America and work on my Spanish, I guess. That would be fun.
Okay, I warned you at the beginning that I was going to ask you a personal question that you have the option of not, because it is personal.
Okay,
It's
I'm in.
none of your damn business,
All
Agnes.
right. I like those questions usually. Okay, go ahead.
You have two daughters. When did you find the time to have children?
Oh, well, okay. So, great marriage, great divorce. I ended up, most of my travel was when I was divorced.
Well, given
I
the fact you were engaged to a French
know, right?
captain,
Yeah, that
thank
kind of tells
goodness.
that, doesn't it? Yeah, that tells the story. But and I would come back to Spokane a lot. I would come back home and see the girls a lot, just to touch base. I'm still here. I'm on the planet. But they graduated from high school. My parents were both gone, and I was like, there's nothing holding me. They had their own lives and they were doing their own thing. So I felt like it was okay for me to go. And one of my daughters tells me that she, if she had to do it, she's married and has four children. Thank you for the grandchildren, by the way. And but she said, I think I could be in Africa as a nurse doing some work there. I mean, she's extraordinarily happy where she is, but it's like, wow, there's a whole different world out there that she would live too if she could. Do you know what I'm
Yeah,
saying? It's
yeah.
like we got to
So
get out there then.
she has a wee bit of you in there somewhere.
I
And
think
with
so.
time, I mean, her kids are going to be grown and doing their own thing at some point in time too.
Yeah, I think so. I think she'll want to see the world too. Both of them do. Both of them have that kind of wonder. I took my one daughter to Ireland and oh, that was a long time ago, but we had a blast. We rode horses. We rode their enormous, whatever they were. Oh my gosh. But yeah. So yes, I make time for travel. Absolutely. And I would like to travel more again. It just now it's like I've got to squeeze it in between everything else. So yeah.
Where will be next?
Oh boy. I'm doing a cruise in December. Oh, thanks for asking. I forgot to tell you. It's called a Spirit Heart Cruise. December 8, I think. It's for a week. And we take off out of Galveston and we go to Roatan, Cozumel, Honduras, and then we come back to Galveston. It's a Spirit Heart Cruise. And I get to teach. I'm thrilled. I get to do a 2-hour presentation on numerology. So yay! Check it out. It's a Spirit Heart Cruise. And I think you can find it out on my website, wisdomandnumerology.com. You can find out some information on that. But so yeah, that's my next big one. I'm excited.
Well, if I can put a carrot out there for you too, last year, last December, I interviewed a fellow whose mother runs a company to out of the Galapagos.
Fun.
Oh yeah, and some of the like talking to him was just like I want to do this. And she's just her. I was supposed to talk to his mother, but she'd had I can't remember an accident or something, and so I was talking to him, and he was the Swedish. Well, I think they're all young, right?
Yeah,
He's
right. Yeah.
married with kids, but he's still too
Right.
young.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was sort of another little carrot for me as well. But
That. Yeah. No, I love Peru. Oh my gosh. Living in the jungle. I love the jungle. There's something about it. And the bayou. I was thinking about that today because I was thinking, what's she gonna ask me? And I was flashed on the bayous and we went through and fed the alligators. But it was just any different. I love diversity. Absolutely love it.
And you're obviously comfortable in other cultures, other languages. You figure it out somehow.
I like that. Like I said, it's kind of the same. Yeah, the language is different, the people are different, but we're still people, we're still human, it's still language, So yeah, I like the idea of, yeah,
So
comfortable.
tell us about this book.
Oh, well, I got to change that. That book is still in its making, but a lot of it's on my website, susanowens.com. And I talk about a lot of the stories that I've told you today. And it's with photographs. That's the thing. On my website, I can put my photos. So, and I put more on all the time and I keep adding more. So it may just end up, the book may turn into being a travel website. It's what it may end up being. Or it may be a book too. I love to write, so I got to go more places or write more, I think.
Well, when you got old and can't do anything else, you can write the books.
I can absolutely write books, more books.
Yeah. Okay, so remind us where we find you on the World Wide Web.
Oh, wisdomandnumerology.com and susanowens.com, and that's Susan with a Z, SUZANOwens.com. Those are all the travel stories. I don't think they're all on there. I think I still have a few more to add, so I'll put that on my list.
And I'm just going to clarify, because when you said that so quickly, it sounded like you said wisdom and numerology. It's Wisdom of Numerology, which is, I believe you have a book by the same name. Come on, sell yourself there, girl.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thanks, Agnes. Yes, Wisdom and Numerology is a book that I wrote actually a couple years ago, and I'm working on another one. See, here's another project, a Wisdom of Numerology for Teens, because I was thinking about that, how much I would have loved to have had this information when I was a teenager. You know, I can just, so I'm working on that. That's another thing. But it's really important to me. You can check out my website. I do readings. I've got a couple of different readings that I do about your numerology chart. I can tell you what the future holds for you with regards to numerology. And then every once in a while, a little piece of psychic wisdom flips through there. So it's great.
Well, and we'll make it easy for them. That was the episode that came out on the 22nd of August, 2024. So they can go back and look for that, because, yeah, that was pretty interesting. I enjoyed that.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, it's so fun talking to you, Agnes. I'm pretty sure I talked most. That's why it's so fun. I get to talk most of the time, right? I mean,
that's great. Well, and as I say, because you're psychic, I don't even have to refer to I don't know why I go to make notes with you. You know, I mean,
well, direct me, like every once in a while. I'm like, wait a minute, we need to talk about something that I missed, because that's, I get going and then I don't pull myself back. But yeah.
Okay. So, you know this already. Your website link is in the show notes. I've put all the links on your page at our website. And for everybody listening, check out the numerology stuff. I went into that interview not having a clue what I was talking about, which fortunately you did. So I didn't have to say much there either. Okay, listeners, I can't be the only person who loves to hear personal travel stories. Do you have some? Do you have travel in your future? Talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. You know, this isn't in my usual notes, but I will mention too that a new feature, when you go to boomwithabang.com, there's a little tag at the top that says podcast, and then there's a drop down part of the menu that is age-related resources or something. And what I've done is I've divided the last couple of years of interviews by subject. So if you're interested in travel, you click on the travel, it shows you all of the interviews that fall under that. So yeah, because it's in my blood, it'll happen one day. Share this episode. It may prompt your friends to share their stories, and what a great set of conversations over a cup of tea or a glass of wine. Probably, Susan, it's a fabulous walk down memory lane.
Super fun. Thank you. Thank you.
Leave stars and reviews where you can. They keep the algorithm goddesses happy. I'm on a mission this fall to get more boomers listening to podcasts. It's got to grow. You can support this podcast by buying me a cup of coffee. The link is in the show notes and above Susan's head on their page at our website. I've also registered at Substack. Following there is for free. Susan Owens, thank you for being my guest again today. I feel my feet getting itch here. Hearing you talk, because again, you've relaxed back into that lovely chair of yours. But once you start talking, you're forward and you're so animated. So it's just, yeah, it's so good talking to you.
It's so easy to get fired up, I can tell you. But thank you, Agnes, again, for having me on the show. Call me anytime. I'm not kidding. I'll be here. We'll talk about something else totally different. That'll be fun.
Okay, well, you send me a subject and I'll book it.
Awesome. Sounds great.
Okay, thanks. Have a great rest of week.
You too. Bye-bye.